Hey guys, welcome to the Mental Makeover Podcast. I'm Lauren Curtis. You've probably heard the phrase, the grass is always greener on the other side, but I believe it's greener where you water it. This podcast is here to provide you with meaningful advice from myself and others in order to give your little patch of grass the best chance to grow and flourish. Hey guys.
Hey guys.
Long time no speak. I have been a little busy and I don't like to not upload weekly. Life has just flown by, which is strange. You'd think it would be the opposite considering we're all in isolation and we're all stuck at home and there's not much we can do, but I guess that's where this episode comes in. I just want to talk with you about something that I've been thinking a lot about recently. Isolation. Let's talk about it. I have pretty much lived this way for quite a long time. This is my lifestyle. I like to stay at home. I'm not a people person. I keep to myself. I'd rather be at home than go outside. I mean, not outside. I love being outside, but, you know, socializing perhaps with other human beings. So it wasn't really a shock for me. It hasn't really been a shock for me. It's still not a shock for me. And pretty much the same with Reese. He's very similar. I mean, he misses going to the beach and doing those kinds of things and the gym, but pretty much everything's still the same. So I've been fine. In fact, it's kind of nice to be at home and to not feel like I have to make excuses for why I'm at home, which I know is my own. Like I shouldn't have to feel like I need to make excuses for loving to be a homebody, but I guess those of you who are homebodies, you get it. Like people ask you, what did you do on the weekend? And you're like, oh, I did not do anything. And you feel guilty. You feel like you should say, oh, I went, like, I don't know, on a boat. And then I went to a friend's birthday party. And then I went exploring in the wilderness and went on a hike or something. When in reality, I did nothing and it was great. But thanks for asking. Sorry, I couldn't provide a more interesting answer. So that's basically where I'm at. It's kind of nice to be at home and to not feel like I need to justify that, which is something in itself. I need to be like, you know what? Oh, there was a guy on First Dates, a TV show, and he was like, my name's, I don't know, so-and-so. I'm a doctor. I have a mortgage. I have a dog. And I have no edge. He's like, I like to describe myself as a sphere. There's no edge. Basically saying he's like as vanilla as it gets. And I cracked up and I just said to Reese, I'm like, what a legend. I love that. Imagine just being someone who can be like, you know what? I am boring. But you're not even boring. It's just like, I guess our perception of ourselves is always a little bit off. So we think we're boring, but we're actually not. I mean, he made me laugh more than the people that are probably in his eyes more exciting. But anyway, sidetracked. So yeah, that's where I'm at. So this time alone has, I guess, even though I am a homebody, there are certain things that I thought that I needed that I got from the outside world. Like all of my creature comforts, all the things that you love having around you, like your usual appointments, all these things that you, like part of your routine, I guess, these things that like kind of anchor you to where you are and become such a part of your routine and your life that you feel like you have to have them in your life because you depend on them for whatever reason. And it probably makes it sound like I'm talking about like hair appointments or lash appointments. Part of it for sure, but it's also like everything that you do every single day, your entire routine, the time apart from your usual routine in every possible way, in every part of your routine, having that change or breaking away from that routine is kind of in some ways really eye-opening. And I think for a lot of us, it's making us reevaluate how much we actually A, need that routine, and B, like it in the first place. I think a lot of people are taking a look at their priorities and realizing that because life moves so quickly and we're so used to being busy, and it's almost like if you're not busy, you're doing something wrong. It's almost like as a society, we encourage busyness and stress and a fast pace because that's what success equals. You know, if you're busy, it means that there's a reason you're busy. Like, you know, people want your business or your, I don't know, friendship or this or that. Like, it's a strange perception, I think. It's funny how we prioritize busyness. And so perhaps a lot of people now are looking at their lives when they're forced to slow down, they have no other choice but to slow down, and thinking, oh, so this is what life could be like. And how different is this life that I'm now uncovering compared to the life I've been living for the past decade or more? And that is a confronting thing for a lot of people, because it's easy to ignore the reality of your situation when you don't have the time to actually delve into it and analyze it and reflect on it. But it's a lot harder to ignore it when you're forced to think about it and you're forced to live a different lifestyle. The majority of us wake up, we go to work, we come home, we cook dinner, we go to sleep, we wake up, we go to work, we cook dinner, we go to sleep. And there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that, especially if you love what you do, then like, hell yeah. But many of us are doing that in order to survive and to provide for our families, which again, not a bad thing, of course, like what else would you do in that situation? But for those who have lost their jobs, not having the option to go to work anymore and being forced, not necessarily in a bad way, I'm not saying forced as in like, oh, I'm being forced, but forced to stay at home, perhaps with your family or your partner, and then realizing how different life could be, but then it also has the opposite effect for some people. Some people are like, ah, I miss work, I want to go back to work, I'm sick of being at home, I'm getting claustrophobic, and it's almost just like peeling back the curtain and revealing what truly matters to you and what truly brings you joy and peace and comfort, and also revealing what you do need that you always knew you needed, what you need that you didn't realize you needed, what you don't need that you knew you didn't need, and what you don't need and what you thought you did. I hope I said that right. And I have been feeling that myself, not on a huge scale, because I feel like I've had thoughts about things and I guess dreams and goals that I've had for, I don't know, at least 3 years probably, and I've always just pushed them to the back of my head, like, oh, you know, yeah, that would be great one day, yeah, that would be great, but there's always a but oh, I can't do it because of this, or but I've got this, or then that means I have to stop this, that means that I can't do this, that means that this will change. So one day, and then you just tuck that little goal back into the back of your brain on the back burner, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, it'll rear its head again, and you're like, oh, that would be so nice, and you have a little daydream for a moment, and then you think, oh, whoops, anyway, back to work, back to this, back to reality, and then you tuck it back a little bit further. And then it comes back, and then you tuck it back. And it's like this constant cycle of little daydream, and then going, and then waking yourself up and being like, oop, unrealistic, can't do that. All right, back to reality. And I feel like, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but at least for a lot of us, that would be what is happening right now for many of us. It's like, okay, so I'm kind of stripped back bare. I am very vulnerable. I'm not really tied down to much at the moment because I don't really have much at the moment because I don't have access to much. And so, ooh, those dreams and those goals that I had, like maybe now's a good time to start actually considering them. Maybe it's not that hard. Maybe I don't have as many roadblocks as I thought I did. Maybe there aren't as many obstacles in my way as I thought there were. Maybe this is actually doable, and that is really exciting. And that's where I'm at right now, and Reese as well. I will talk about exactly what that means for me and what I'm actually thinking a little later down the track. I don't like talking about things like plans until they've actually unfolded, just because I've had many times where I've told people, like, in my life, like, everyone that I've met, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that. And then every time I saw them following that little spiel, they're like, oh, how's this going? How's that going? And I'm like, because if I change my mind or it didn't, you know, didn't come to fruition, then I feel like I'm letting someone down by being like, oh yeah, it didn't happen. So now I just don't tell people until what I've done or what I want to do has happened or hasn't happened. So that's what I'm also doing here, but I can't wait to tell you guys about it because I'm pretty sure it is going to happen. But anyway, let's just pause that for now. So that's what I want to talk about, I guess, today is the whole if not now, when thing, which it sounds very cliche. And I guess the only reason it sounds cliche is because for most of us, it's a case of like, it's not realistic. Our dreams aren't realistic for us because we've got all these things that are tying us down and it's just not the right time. But that's what I'm talking about. Like when is the right time? When will it ever be the right time? At what point in your life are you going to get to a place where you're like, okay, this is in order, this is in order, this is in order. Now is the perfect time. I can almost guarantee you that time will never come. Because even if a few of the roadblocks you come across clear, then you're probably going to be faced with new ones that cause you to be pushed back yet again. Like you might, clear two issues, but then because you've cleared those issues, a few new ones come along and you have to clear those ones as well as the old ones before you get to a point where you're like, yes, now's the time, I can do it, everything's, my schedule's clear, my life is clear, free, I'm unattached to anything. I don't think that's ever going to happen, realistically. So the next thing you have to think of is, if not now, when? If there's never going to be a perfect time, then am I going to do this or not? Like, how important is this to me? How much does this actually mean to me? How often do I think about this? There's a, I love Oprah. I mean, who doesn't love Oprah? But she has spoken about, it's kind of like a different context, but change and resisting change. Here's an example. If you're in a bad relationship, how about you're in a relationship and there have been a few little red flags, like maybe they've got a little trait that you kind of have to think twice about, that they do something that you're like, is that kind of normal? I'll give you a perfect example. The guy I dated before Reese, this went like, I think I've spoken about it before. Our relationship, I barely even call it a relationship, our fling, let's call it that. So we met and I think within literally like two weeks, I think, he told me that he loved me. And I had never told anyone that I loved him before. And in my gut, I really, 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 really liked this guy. But that was too much for me. And I remember Googling, how soon is too soon to tell someone that you love them? Because I didn't know. I was like, in my gut, I was like, this doesn't feel right. That's weird. I felt a little bit weirded out by him. Even though I really, really liked him, I was like, this doesn't feel right. And that was the first little sign. My gut was like, It was a little whisper, and that's what Oprah says. It starts out as a whisper. You're like, oh, okay, that feels a bit off, but you know, you have rose-colored glasses on, so you think, wow, this guy loves me. I must be really special, and this must be real, true love. Gross. And then what happened next? Oh yeah, it just starts to move really, really quickly, and I think I met his family. And he was really, really, really wealthy. And my family is not like that. So I remember my mum, when he was going to come up to my mum's house, my mum was like, oh no, have you told him? Like, we've got a really small house. And oh, like she was really embarrassed by the fact that, you know, we didn't have much money, especially compared to him. And I was kind of like, oh, that's, and I'm like, you know, that's not his fault that mum felt like that. That's, you know, our own stuff that we've got to deal with. But I was like, okay, so there was always a bit of a separation, because I remember when I went to his house, this big, beautiful house, and we had like, I don't know, did like, what are they called? Homemade pizza in the pizza oven, and had all these fancy little toppings and things. And I felt like, you know, when you go into a fancy store and you feel like you can't touch anything, or I don't know, maybe that's just me. That's just me. But it was like that. And I felt so out of place. I was like, how do I do this? I didn't want to like put my toppings on the wrong way. And I just felt like, yeah, completely out of my comfort zone. I just didn't feel like I fit in. And, oh, and that's right. And he had like a neck problem or a back problem or something. And his mum was like, you know, we got you an appointment with this chiro or whatever, obviously one of the best. And he was like, I'm not going to wait in line, because there must have been a lot, like a wait for this doctor or chiro or whatever. And he's like, I'm not going to wait in line. I'm not going to wait, as if he was superior to all the other like povos that had to wait in line for this good doctor. And in my head, I was like, what the hell? That's so gross. Who are you? But again, you have rose-colored glasses on. You just think, oh, you know, you make an excuse for this person. And so that was like the little shove, you know, whisper, a shove, and then it becomes bigger things, and it becomes like a stronger shove, like a brick to the face. And then it comes like a bus hitting you. And anyway, that was just an example, but there's obviously other stuff in that little fling that just built up gradually. And I'm sure many of you can relate to this, and, you know, whether it's a relationship or it's a job or a friendship or whatever it might be. Change comes, and it usually comes in the form of little subtle signs. It's a whisper, it's a nudge, it's a shove, it's like a push, and then it's like a bus. And by the time the bus comes, you've tried to resist it for so long that it's like you have no other choice. And it hurts a lot more when the bus comes, because you've neglected and ignored all those other little signs leading up to that point. And so when you finally hit by the bus, I mean, that hurts a lot more than being, you know, whispered to or nudged. But because it's instinctive within us. Change sucks for the most part. It sucks until we realize that there was a silver lining. But up until that point, we're kind of like resisting arrest. we resist it because we like our routine. We like our familiar surroundings and our familiar creature comforts and our, yeah, just it. Like normality, I guess. And so no one wants to change that. And so we resist it. And I guess that's what I had been doing a lot. I'm sure many of you guys have, is like, yeah, pushing back and resisting your dreams, even though you've had that whisper, oh, I'd love to do this or that, or I feel like this job isn't right for me, or this friend isn't right for me, or this relationship isn't right for me, or whatever. And then you get the push. Oh, I really, and that feeling becomes stronger, and then it's a shove, and you're like, ah, at what point do you start to listen and think, this feeling is evidently it's not going to go away. So at what point do I pursue it, or do I take this seriously? Because again, I'm going to throw another cliche at you. We've only got one life. Oh, I feel so lame saying that, but it's true. Like this, what I was saying to Reese, how we were talking about it, like, we're in the prime of our lives right now. You know, late 20s, early 30s, this is the prime of our life. Like we don't want to get caught in that trap of forever thinking, oh, one day we'll do that. Now's not the right time, but one day, I'm sure one day it's all going to change, and one day this perfect moment is going to line up for us, and it's going to be the perfect opportunity. Because most people, for absolutely good reason, because I know this is very easy to say, a lot harder to do, and that's why a lot of people do push it to the back burner, because it is quite hard to implement unless you really, really, really want to and believe in yourself. Most people spend their entire lives working to achieve one particular goal. Like, for example, I don't know, pay off your mortgage, or buy all these investment houses and pay off those mortgages so that when you're old and grey, you have all these assets and you have all this money and you have, like, I don't know, freedom, and you don't have to worry, and you can retire comfortably. But like, what about all that time in between? What about all that, like, you got A, the starting point, C, the end point. What about B? And B is probably like the longest period of time. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? Are you just waking up, going to work just to pay off those mortgages, wishing all that precious time away for a point in time that you haven't even, that's not even guaranteed? Who knows what can happen between that point? Not trying to use scare tactics, but nothing is guaranteed. We have this, we live in under this false security blanket of, yeah, everything's guaranteed. Nothing is certain. Nothing is guaranteed. And I think this whole coronavirus thing has really made that evident. Like, look how much our lives have been flipped upside down by one thing that has completely rocked our entire lives. And that was in a space of a couple of weeks or months. That's how quickly this, like, you know, life can change. And so do I want to spend the next 5, 10, 15 years wishing my life away, saying, yeah, I'll pursue my dreams one day. I'll do this one day. One day, this relationship, this business, this job, this friendship that isn't working for me, it's all right. Like, it's leading me to a point in the future that will be fine. Like, it'll get better. It's okay. It's all for something. But what about, yeah, what about, like, nothing is going, I guess, another cliche. Don't look backwards. You're not going there. Don't look forwards. That hasn't happened yet. All you have is right now. The future's not guaranteed. The past has already happened. You can't change it. All you have is right now. What are you going to do with that time? What are you going to do with that time? I don't want to wish it away. I don't want to bank on a certain outcome happening in the future that is never actually guaranteed, that might be completely different once I get there. Perhaps when I'm old and I've worked and I've done all these things that I thought would lead me to point C, I don't want point C anymore. I want something different, or I'm tired, or I'm exhausted, and I don't feel like doing the things that I dreamt of doing at point A. I just want to sleep. I just want to chill out. But I still dream of those times in point B where I could have made all these new experiences and done all the things I wanted to do back then and lived a really fulfilling, like, rich life. But I chose to wait till I got to a point where I'm at right now, assuming I'd still be able to do those things, still want to do those things, but that feeling's passed and now I don't really want to do much, and I've missed out on that really great part of my life where, yeah, I really could have lived my life to the fullest. I don't know. I know it sounds very idealistic, and that's the thing. That's why it kind of sucks. Because saying this, I'm like, wow, it sounds like I'm a hippie that's like, live your life. But why does it have that stigma? Why does living your best life actually have that stigma? And I know from, I'm in a position, granted that I've put myself in this position, I'm not going to discredit myself, I've put myself in this position, it was never handed to me, the odds were always against me, but put myself in a position where I can do a lot more for myself than other people are probably able to, because I have the freedom of my income being made online, so I can do anything, be anywhere. And obviously recently I don't have kids, which makes life a whole lot easier. But just because you have kids doesn't mean you are doomed for the rest of your life. There are so many options available to us. I think it just seems so far-fetched and, like, yeah, cliche and hippie and unrealistic to think that they're actually possible, because we're all fed this idea of life, which is wake up, go to work, come home, eat, go to sleep, wake up, etc., etc. And it's safe. I guess that's why a lot of people like it, because it is safe. It's secure. It's, well, I mean, not really, because look at us all now. Like, half of us have lost our jobs. It's just, and that's, I guess, why it feels like a bit of a facade as well. And perhaps this time has really made that more evident. Like, we thought we had all this security. We thought we had this certainty, but we don't, because these jobs that we relied on can be taken away from us so quickly. So, like, what are we actually holding on to? Like, what is the point? If the one reason we live this life, this, A, B, C life is to have security and comfort to look after our children, but or our family, or just ourselves. If that's not even guaranteed, then like why are we choosing this life when we could be living a life that feels more authentic to us and more fulfilling? If the outcome would still be the exact same, you know, if nothing is guaranteed, and it's not. So that's what I've been thinking about a lot about. And Reese and I are making some big plans. I'm really, really excited. And I think that's something I'm really proud of. I'm proud of the fact that I really do live my life led by my heart. Even in high school, I remember I was in year 11 and I did my exams and everything. And by year 12, I was like, I don't want to go to university. Deep in my soul, I know that I do not want to go to university. So I'm not going to put the extra stress on myself to study through exams, because they, I mean, who likes exams? Not me, but they torture me. I don't deal with that kind of stress well. I mean, I'm not saying that anyone really does, because, yeah, gross. But I said to myself, I'm going to take a risk. I don't want to go to university. I know people are going to say to me, oh, and like, you know, have an opinion. And oh, yes, they did. I had teachers, I had my friends being like, you're like, you know, you're so smart. You can do this. Just do it. Like, why would you waste your intelligence or whatever? And I was like, because I don't want to do this. Why would I waste my time doing something that I know I don't want to do? That doesn't make me happy. I don't want to do that. So I took the alternative pathway, which was non-TE. Probably means nothing to you if you're from any other place than WA, and perhaps, I think that's outdated anyway, but yeah, I took the other pathway, like vocational training, more of like a hands-on, a lot simpler, but actually a lot more practical, and I loved it. I had a great year 12, and I finished at the top of my classes. I got ducks, even for religion. I'm not religious, so I even won the award for that. I took home the awards for like IT and business and religion and maths, I think, and I was really proud of myself, and you know what? Absolutely zero regrets. Absolutely zero regrets, because I followed my heart. And then out of high school, I studied photography again. I had feedback about that, which was, you know, it's I did work experience in year 12 with a photographer, with a photography company. And even she said to me, this isn't a good avenue to go down. She's like, it's really hard to make money. So I was like, okay, that's inspirational. Thanks. Still went and studied it because it's what I enjoyed. It was something that I loved and I wanted to further my knowledge in that. So I studied it and I enjoyed it. And that is when I was working at Target in the makeup section, and I was getting into makeup because in year 12, I was going clubbing and stuff, which, no, it wasn't going clubbing, I was going to house parties, and I'd never really done that before, so I was wearing makeup more, and, like, I was also studying photography, which is a story that I tell whenever a publication or whatever interviews me. How did you get started? Well, I was studying photography, something I loved, and I was just getting into makeup, something I loved, and I thought, you know what, I am going to film little makeup videos, because I'm buying all this cheap like Revlon makeup, love it, and I'm having fun trying it out. And I was really actually quite scared to do that, because in year 12 I was targeted by my own friends, not all of them, but some of them, they're really bitchy ones, jerks, and they were bullying me, and I knew that if my little videos got found out, they would have a field day. Like, that is the easiest target. Lauren films herself, because at that time, you know, no one was filming YouTube videos. No way. It was like 2000 and what year was it? 2010, I believe. Yeah. No one was filming YouTube videos, so it was such an easy, yeah. Anyway, but I thought to myself, no, this is important to me and I really enjoy this. And I had like 2000 subscribers and I was living my best life, thinking like, oh my God, like talking to people in different countries about makeup. And then of course they found out and they loved that, but I kept going because my channel was taking off, and guess where I am now? Here talking to you. And my life, like, are you serious? There's no amount of money I would have bet on, probably not even a dollar, wouldn't even bet a dollar on my life turning out the way it has. But I like to believe that all those times I was led with my heart and I followed my heart and trusted my instincts, led me to this amazing situation that I'm in now. I chose this for myself. A lot of people say, oh, you're so lucky to do what you do. And I hate the word luck. As Oprah says as well, luck is preparation meeting the moment of opportunity. Luck doesn't just fall into your lap. I feel like you've got to take the steps towards it, and it's met with the moment of opportunity, which is, I guess, perhaps where the luck might come in, but it's not, because if you're not prepared, then it's not going to come to fruition. So I don't know. That's why I guess I'm giving myself a lot more credit for the position that I'm in now, because a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, you don't go on all these trips, all these brand trips, and you don't travel, and if I were you, I'd go on all these amazing brand trips. And I always felt guilty that I didn't want to. That doesn't appeal to me. I mean, it's been amazing. There's been, you know, certain trips that were incredible and like life changing, and I don't regret it for one bit, but I turned down a lot. And that's because it's just not my vibe. The particular brief or the people or the place or the vibe or even the brand, not my vibe. And so I turn it down, and people are like, oh, I'd kill to go on that trip. Think about all the people that would love to go on that trip. And so sometimes I go on them out of guilt, which I don't do anymore. But it's like, you know what? If those people wanted to do those things, if they would kill to do those things, then they can get themselves in a position where they're able to do those things, which is what I've done. I've put myself in a position, because I followed my heart and I've trusted my gut, that has allowed me to be in a position where I can follow my dreams. And everyone can do that. They've just got to, I don't know, it's, you've just got to believe in yourself and believe that you're worthy of taking those risks and that everything will be okay. And if it's not okay, you've always got backup options. There's always, it's not just doom or gloom. There's always options available to you. You've just got to want what you want bad enough and believe in yourself enough. And that way the risks are worth it, because with anything in life, you're always going to have risks. There's going to be risks with everything. You know, there's risks with your safe 9-to-5 life. There's risks with living your dream life. There's always going to be risks. You just got to weigh up which ones are worth it and which ones have the bigger pot of gold at the end. And that's what, yeah, that's what I'm thinking a lot about these days, is this is just, I guess perhaps it's the whole, like, how the world's been turned upside down that's really made me realize, like, yeah, again, I've said a million times already, but, like, nothing's guaranteed. So now is the time to really think seriously about where you want your life to go, and knowing that you're worth it. You deserve to live the life you dream of, and stop telling yourself otherwise, or stop letting other people tell you otherwise, because you're going to get a lot of, you know, feedback from other people saying, oh no, that's unrealistic, or what about this and what about that, and that's fine. It's reasonable to think that way. We've all been conditioned to believe that you've got to live a certain kind of life, so when someone goes outside of the box, like, you know, it makes sense. People live out of fear a lot of the time, and so you're going to get a lot of people coming to you out of fear. I know I do it a lot. You know, if Reese comes to me with a kind of out there idea or something, or he wants to do something really different to what he's normally been doing, my first reaction is like, oh, but what about this? What about that? And so I'm becoming very self-aware and realizing, like, no, my first reaction should be embracing something that he's excited about. Oh yeah, like, tell me about it. Why do you want to do that? How would that work? Cool. And then if you really still feel that primal instinct of, I guess it's like protection, then you talk about it, but you don't come to someone with that first. That's not your first response. And so, yeah, I'm talking about all of this stuff as if I'm like, I'm immune to it, but I'm not. Like, I have all the same, you know, doubts and thoughts and fears like all of you guys probably do, but I guess now I'm really starting to take my goals more seriously. I think we're all just scared of failure, which makes total sense. I know I am. We're all scared of doing something, putting our all into it, and then having it fail. But something I've been coming to terms with and learning and acknowledging and embracing is the fact that you can never really fail, because even if you fail at something, you've still learnt so much in the process that you wouldn't have learned otherwise. And perhaps if you didn't do that particular thing that you think you failed at, you would have failed, in air quotes, at something else and would have had to learn the same lesson some other way. Like, sometimes we actually just need to learn the lesson the hard way, because that's the only way you can learn it. I remember someone that I follow on Instagram, she said that, her name's Greta, she's done a lot of, created a lot of businesses, and she's an entrepreneur. She has a lot of inspirational, like, business advice, and I can't remember exactly what she said, but it was something along the lines of, if you fail at your business, for example, and then you start from scratch again, a lot of people are really, really scared to fail because they're scared to start from scratch and have to go back to square one. But no one actually stops to think that you're not starting from square one. You're starting way further down the line because you have all of this knowledge that you gained from that first business failing. In your mind, failing. I hate the word failing because it has really negative connotations, but I'm guessing you know what I'm talking about. So you're never starting from square one. It's impossible to start from square one unless you didn't take anything out of that first failure, unless you didn't take anything out of it. You didn't learn any lessons, or you didn't stop to reflect on what you could have done better. If you take the time to realize, why didn't this work? Why didn't I enjoy it? Why wasn't it right for us or me? Then you go forward into the next venture and you have all of this knowledge. It's impossible for you to start from scratch. You're not starting from scratch. You're starting from a really, really good position, in fact, because you know what doesn't work, what does work, what you need to do next time. And that means that the next thing you do is going to be bigger and better. And think about how many crazily successful people have failed at a million other things before they got to that point where they've a massively successful business making millions or billions of dollars. It's very scary to have to start over or to end something before you wanted it to end, or to have to throw in the towel. And I'm just not just talking about business, I'm talking about anything in life. But there could be so much more to gain. As another quote, when you say no to something, you say yes to something else. And when you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. So, you know, I'll put this in context of a relationship. You're saying yes to a bad relationship, you're saying no to a good one, because you're not opening yourself up to a better relationship that actually fulfills you and makes you happy and makes you feel good about yourself. If you say no to that bad relationship, you're saying yes to meeting someone who treats you properly and treats you well and treats you with respect and you have fun with and makes you laugh. But same thing with business. You stay in a business or a job that you hate, you're saying no to a job that you absolutely love and fulfills you. So sometimes you do have to say no to something, whether that be failing or choosing to end something prematurely before you would have expected to end it. There's also that quote, fail smart and fail quickly. If you can feel like if you know something isn't right, if it's not working, if it's not fulfilling you, if it's not making you happy, end it sooner rather than later. Fail quickly so that you have more time to do something that does fulfill you and make you happy, and that will be a success. Whatever success looks like for you. It takes a whole lot of courage to be vulnerable, and I think it is worth it. It is worth it if your courage and your vulnerability results in a kind of happiness you had never experienced and never thought was possible. There's some food for thought for you. I'll let you stew on that. Thank you so much for listening. If you did enjoy this episode, or you're enjoying my podcast at all, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It's the biggest compliment you can give me, and I really, really, really appreciate those of you who have already done so. Thank you so much. Believe in yourself, believe in your dreams, believe they are possible, because they are. And yeah, I can't wait to see what might open up for you when you take the path less traveled. Thanks for listening. I love you guys, and I'll speak to you all in my next episode. Bye, guys.